Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, that's great. That sounds terrific. Thank you.
Approximately 8:40 a.m.
a homeowner in Monk's Corner by the name of Cecil Barwick says that he was home shaving when he heard a noise. That is when he said he went to the window and looked out to see if there was a family member coming home. He contends that the car of the family member was not in the driveway, so therefore he knew something was wrong, and he armed himself. Shortly after that, he stumbled upon Bobby Gaston in the home, carrying what he said was a bag in one hand and a rifle in the other. He further stated that he heard someone else upstairs, and he did not know if that person was armed. So it appears at that point he shot Bobby, and then he said that he fled the house, going to a neighbor to make the 911 call. And we have the 911 tape, and we're going to play that a little later. But what we know also is that a second suspect, after, I guess, Mr. Barwick left the home, actually ran from the residence and was later arrested. A third suspect, we understand, turned himself into authorities without incident. Now, some would say that's the end of the story. But the family of Bobby Gaston says not so fast. They contend that there is more to the story, and they're asking the Justice Department to look into the shooting. At this time, we're going to introduce the uncle of Bobby Gaston, Tyler Williams, and also we're going to bring on Zoe Spencer, the family advocate, and we're going to ask them if I got all the facts straight about this story and if there's anything else they would like to add to what I said. Good evening, Ms. Zoe, and good evening, Tyler.
Good evening.
Good evening, everyone. Okay, I hear some feedback in someone's background, so if you would turn your computer down for a better reception.
Okay,
Tyler, are you with us?
Yes, Tyler's here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Can you tell us, you heard my introduction about what I know so far about this case. Is there anything that I left out that you would like to say about what happened that day?
Not so much left out, but what we dispute as far as the changing of the story. Initially, I know you said official statement, I don't know if the police gave you that, saying that he went and looked out the window. But if you look at all published reports, including the initial investigation, what statement given by Lieutenant Roach on the scene, he clearly said that the owner went out. He even, if someone say, well, the mess of, he, that meant he went out of the, was suggested it meant he went out of the, out of the room that he was in. But then he used the term, he went back in.
Okay.
And so we dispute the fact. And also it said he saw him coming down the stairs and he shot him. That was also left out of his statement as well. So this is the whole thing, reason why we were saying about questions being asked, because there were statements that were being made that just inconsistent. And if you're dealing with professional investigators, there should be not, for especially for an open and shut case, it really shouldn't be so many inconsistencies. It just raises questions, and to have closure and to lay our nephew to rest, we just need questions answered. I mean, it's simple. We don't want to cause any trouble. That's not what we came here, but we want questions answered. And it seems like the more we ask questions, the more hostile the authorities become. And that raises another flag. Why are you so hostile? Surely you can understand that my nephew was shot in the back of the head in the house, and you know, and you would be concerned about that, because at that point, shot in the back of the head, you would want to make sure, is it indeed someone, are you protecting property? Are you protecting your life, you know, when you're shooting someone in the back of the head? And so it raises questions that we would want to know, how could you be on the scene and say this is open and shut, and then admit that you're not asking any questions other than what made them target this house? And that's to us, that's an issue, because we need a legitimate reason to do that, and it seems that people become more hostile when we ask that question. And I think the general public at large would agree that that is a legitimate question, and the CASA doctrine does not support, just randomly shooting people just because they're in your house. You know, we've read it, but it clearly defines the use of lethal force, and so that's what we were saying. If the officers are going to say that, show us, because he was unarmed, and yet he was shot in the back of the head. So I'll let you, ask any further questions.
Well, let me ask you this. Were you initially told that he was shot somewhere else other than the head?
Yes. Chief Coroner, when I spoke to him personally as we were coming down, I asked him because and most people think it's pretty reasonable. It would be unreasonable for me not to ask that question because if you have a loved one that you know that you love and they tell you, you know, this person has now been is dead and you know and you realize this person is so young and you just you know you think it's seeing them and they're smiling and then you know you're, number one you're in disbelief and so the first question is like you know well how do you know it's him you know tell me you know you made a mistake and the next thing you're going to ask is you know well what happened. You know, and he said, well, he basically was shot, you know, it was a burglary, and, you know, he was shot in the chest. So those are things that you're not going to forget. It's not something you're going to really make a mistake with. I would say that, you know, I'm not the most emotional person. Anybody that knows me would tell you that. I mean, I could get very excited or passionate about something, but I'm not that emotional when it's something that requires me to think. And something like that, you don't want to just, like, I could have passed out, you know. So it's like, I need to control myself. You need to listen to what he's saying. So you can find out, you know, how to get your family done because my sister's going to fall apart when she hears this, you know, and how do we console her, you know, and to let her know this. So let me make sure that the facts are streaming. Let me make sure I understand this correctly. Let me make sure that they've proven that they know this is Bobby. As I asked him, I said, well, how did you know, you know, that that's my nephew? He said, I said, who saw him? He said, well, I ID'd him and with the identification we found. And then I see reports that say he didn't have any identification when I got down here. Well, keep in mind, when we heard the report he got that there's nothing that crossed our mind to say something is wrong with this picture. You tell me he got down the chest, I have no reason not to believe you. I wouldn't think that somebody would tell me anything different because not like you wouldn't see the body and know the difference. So that wouldn't make sense until we got down here on the ground and saw the hostility when we asked for the police report at the station that we were told to come there, give them the address, and then we get there and not only did it tell us it wasn't ready, which is not a problem because, you know, you know, maybe the person was going to type it, couldn't show up that day. We don't know. So we didn't come out with an attitude because it wasn't ready. We just wanted closure to this thing. And then when we, you know, were met with such hostility, it's like, you got to be kidding me. If this was your son, if this was your brother, your sister, you want to tell me that you're going to say, oh, he was shot, just come on, give me the body and let me go back to Jersey? No, you're going to want to know. And then if somebody's hostile to you for the report, I didn't commit any crimes. I don't have a criminal record. Why in the world am I treated with hostility? I was not greeted by Lieutenant Roach with, sorry, my condolences, sorry you had to come down here for this. It was, follow me. And we followed him into the room. What do you want? I mean, who approaches somebody like that who just drove 14 hours to get out from New Jersey, you know, with this type of grief going on? So we weren't even met with any level of compassion or sympathy, as if you would have thought we went and broke somebody's house. You know, or
let me ask you, so you're not from Monk's Corner where this happened?
No, we're from North New Jersey.
Okay,
we're from North New Jersey.
Okay, so let me ask you, when Bobby, when the incident happened and Bobby was killed, who identified Bobby?
Well, Chief Coroner, Will Salter, he told me, because I specifically asked him, because he said the aunt ID'd him. He said, and the ID that they had was enough for them to determine. I said, are you sure? And I said, so when we got down here, I asked the aunt that he the particular aunt that he mentioned. I asked her, and she said, I said, well, so what did Bobby look like when you saw him? And she said, what do you mean? I said, Chief Salisbury told me that you ID'd him. She said, I didn't physically see him. She said, I begged and I cried and asked him, can I see him? And he told her, no, only the father who's incarcerated or the mom can see. And he said, but I just want to know, do you know of a Bobby Gaston Jr.? And she said, yes. Escalation, and she told him that's my. And he said the burglary suspect that you know got shot. I wish I was sad for you. That was your nephew. So he's considering that an ID. And then when we see the report, we find out he didn't have any ID on him. So I'm wondering, how do you ID somebody on the phone? Well, you know, there are two. Again, that raises another question. It raises just too many questions because even if somebody is accused of a crime, you have a police lineup or a photo lineup or something to say somebody matched a picture with the body. And mm-hmm. So we, at that point, it really made us want to go see the body.
Mm-hmm.
And we were met with every type of restriction and rule applied, that there was no way we could do that and give closure, you know, to my grieving sister. You know, and I'm down here, I love my sister, you know, I'm here to protect my sister and my family. So there's no way I'm going to allow her to go back and just take, you know, take this body, if we even had access to it at that time, and come back here knowing that why would somebody lie over something like that? You know, I wanted to ask, she saw that, you know, why would y'all tell me? And then he said, well, he never told anybody that. Okay, that's your word. Like, if I want to take a polygraph, I said that on the Facebook. But even if that was the case, I don't even really care about that. The fact of the matter is, let me see my nephew who was shot in the back of the head. I want to see this for myself. I'm not saying that anybody is, I'm not necessarily implicating nobody, because you have judges, juries, prosecutors for that. And if these people say it is what it is, who am I? Only thing I'm saying is, let me see my nephew and let me see, you know, what the real story is. Because if I'm the kid, I mean, he have no head, you know, then I'm going to wonder, the officer saw this on the scene. My next question is, how could you say, why did you not ask any questions with this young man sitting here shot in the back of the head, and you're saying it's open and shut?
Well, is it true that, I mean, we know that Bobby was killed on the 13th of April. Is it true that the family still has not viewed the body?
That is 100% true. The last 2 days, though, I have to say I cannot blame that on the coroner, Chief Coroner Salisbury. He did cooperate with us outside the last time when the county attorney basically was not cooperating with us because we were running a little late because of, you know, we had death threats and things like that over our lives. And so we were concerned about security, and the representative who was responsible for our security gave us a notification that a family, a close friend of the family, had got was sick unto death, and he had to be rushed to the hospital. So he had to go to the Charleston Memorial Hospital, whatever hospital that is in South Carolina. And unfortunately, he could not accompany us. And we called everybody we knew. We called the state police. We called everybody to see if we could just get two. Even told the county when we were already called, and that's why we were on there. I said, we're concerned about our safety. Can you send us two security sheriff's officers, somebody who can escort us? They said, that's not our problem. And they said, it's your job to get in. I said, yeah, but you understand, we have concerns because of the threats over us. And we're outside waiting. We want to come, and our ride is not here. And they show no level of compassion. And because of that, then he said, well, if you can't get here today, you'll have to come back on Monday. And so we have to see.
Oh,
you know,
that yesterday, Thursday?
We were told that yesterday, correct, that they would not accommodate us. But prior to that, Chief Solomon, before the attorney interjected, said even if it was a Friday or Saturday, if that's when our representative, you know, who's part of our security, can get here, that he would accommodate us. He said the county attorney basically advised him against that. And so now my family has to stay out here from New Jersey again just to see my nephew who was shot in the back of his head unarmed. And, I mean, that's not a level of compassion if they really want to see. I mean, we're not here to make trouble. We just want to see my nephew, you know, see if they answer the questions. If not, we can't make people answer questions. But it shows, again, that we want closure for our family, like I said, because when somebody, you lose a family, I just went to a funeral for my godbrother, Corby McGriff. He was a DJ on 107 at Park, the TV show on BET. And he was shot violently. I mean, just that Tuesday before we got this news, we had his funeral, you know, over a few dollars. And so to get a few days later, get this phone call, you know, it's like, it's so traumatic. I mean, I was telling someone, that was the saddest day of my life when I found out he got shot, you know, in a way in which it happened, and even three little kids, and then to get this news. But the thing was, the two guys who did that to him, the suspects, they were caught, because people came forward. So the questions that they were concerned about, like, was it a robbery, they were answered. And so his family, even though they have to go to court, but they have a sense of closure, you know, and they were able to bury Corby. We cannot bury my nephew, and there are questions surrounding. They won't even ask. Not so much they won't even ask. And that's a concern to us, because when we're at the, once we do funeralism, there's still that cloud, the shadow, and we believe that the college can say it's open and shut. Surely they can't. That in their mind, they had closure. Where's the compassion to let this family have closure? But when we do that, we're considered troublemakers and racists, and we're not here for that. You know, we deleted racist comments off of Facebook, but there's so many, so we can't follow them with talking to the press, talking to this one and that one, and, you know, and trying to console one another to be on Facebook 24 hours a day. But we've made comments, but I've made comments on the same. Listen, we're not here for that. We don't endorse that. You know, we don't.
Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Williams. Is it true that, I mean, did I understand you to say that there's death threats?
Yes, we have received reputable death threats, credible death. We've changed hotels since we've been down here. Because
in fear of your life.
Death, Excuse me? Yes.
In fear of your life right now.
In fear of my life right now, my mother is terrified. My sister, my niece, they're terrified. That's why we couldn't even, we wanted to go see the body, but they didn't want to go because of the death threats and the fact that the coroner's office of the state police, nobody wanted to offer, at least escort us. I mean, we're on the news. And so we become, that's what becomes a high-profile case. When you have professional athletes or musicians come to town, the sheriff's department gives them escorts to the arena because they're high-profile. You can't tell me. There are people making all kind of racist comments on Facebook. The authorities see this. And yet they understand that if you read what was posted, comments on the news sites and the newspapers right under our articles, and you listen, people calling us crackheads, and, you know, and even when we cannot get the police support, the lieutenant told me, my brother, we better not come, and of course, we better not come here unless we have our hurts with us to take the body out of there, you know, and tell us, you know, they don't want us in Munt's Corner. So when you have the authorities telling you they don't want you there, and they, you know, they have the ability because they know that we're not from here. So we're way out of line, and so of course you would be concerned. I mean, any rational person would be concerned because there are people saying this was a racial issue. There was this one. We're not going on there telling people that because we don't know the facts. We don't know if this was justified or not, and that's why we have questions because of the police statements. We're inconsistent, so we just ask them to iron out the inconsistencies and come forward. But like, when we ask them to do that, it's like, well, you don't believe us? You know, or you must be a racist. You must be here to cause trouble. And no, they're legitimate questions.
Okay. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHC 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for tonight's topic, the Bobby Gaston shooting, justified or homicide? If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, the chat room is open tonight, so if you have a question or a comment, you can also post it up in chat. I will check in to the chat room from time to time, and I will pose it to the family, and if they choose to answer it, they will. If not, they have certain questions they have told me that we cannot deal with tonight. And so we're asking that if you do call in with questions, comments, or facts, that you're very respectful to the family. They have had a loss. And we're just going to ask that you be dignified in your comments because in all that is said and done, they have never once said that Bobby didn't do anything wrong, but they did lose someone. And so we're asking you to be respectful of that. So, Mr. Tyler, you feel that the authorities just are not telling you everything? Is it that you question the Castle Doctrine as far as how they're using it to say that this is justified because of the Castle Doctrine? What exactly are you questioning?
Here's the thing. The Castle Doctrine is, and I've said this, I've been on the record for saying it, I posted it, so it's documented. We believe that the Castle Doctrine is good enough because it's designed to protect the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
Against, you know, if somebody's coming to your house and they're armed and dangerous and threatening you and your family, you should have a right to protect your family. I'm a firm believer of that.
Right.
However, if we have questions arise and people just say, oh, he was in the house, well, the Castle Doctrine doesn't say you can use lethal force if a person is just in the house. So we're not disputing that.
Mm-hmm.
What we are disputing, though, is the fact that he was unarmed. And keep in mind, even if Chief Salisbury say, well, you know, we never told him he was shot in the chest. He also can go on the record and say, we know we never told him he was shot in the back of the head either. And it wasn't until we went to the press and met with Mr. Andy Perez and said we had a story that we wanted to confirm, and we've been trying to see the body because the story is so alarming that he got shot in the back of the head. How would we know that? You know, how would we know that? And so we wasn't going there saying, oh, we know he got shot in the back of the head. I haven't seen the body. The police reports don't say that. The police never told us that. So how would we know that? We're not coming to get it. To me, that's not even a fact. It's a fact now because the police went on the record now and publicly said it. But until then, it was speculation. And Mr. Perez, we made it perfectly clear to say we need to see the body to clear up because that was the question we had to the police. That wasn't the question because they knew the facts. And so we asked them to tell us the facts, and they refused to basically give us any information that will bring any closure. And the more you do that, for somebody who had a loss, it's going to make them ask the question, like, well, what do you have to hide? Why would you not? You told the public that he got shot. You told the public his name. So why not tell the public he got shot in the back of the head from the beginning? The press was asking, So again, that's another question that we would wonder. Like, if you are so forthcoming with the public because you want them to be informed, why are you withholding that? That's not protecting him. It's not protecting his image. But some people may question the validity of it being self-defense if and say it's not open and shut if he's shot in the back of the head, because then people will ask, well, okay, well, what was the angle of the head? And, you know, people will ask certain reasonable questions, and that's what we're asking. So now that we know, you know, that they come on the record and say, well, yeah, he was shot in the back of the head, why all the hostility? You know, and again, now it makes me wonder because, okay, you say you didn't tell us that. Surely you didn't tell us he got shot in the back of the head. So when we asked you that, why would you say you can only tell the mother? And then when the mother came and said, okay, so we brought the mother forward, they treated her with such hostility. This woman just lost her son. So she's breaking down crying. Oh, well, we can't talk to you in that condition. Listen, well, she's here. Just tell it to her why we're here. You know, how you got shot. Oh, we can't do that under these circumstances. So it was like every excuse possible not to give her any closure. And that's all she was asking. You know, like, what happened to my son? Any mother would say, what happened to my son? Oh, my God. If you saw it, if you didn't see it. You know, like, she probably can't take, look at, you know, see how much she did when an opportunity does avail itself. But it's like, you just want to, oh, my God, this is my oldest child. What is going on? And then he was shot in the back of the head. So it's like, okay, and, you know, and he wasn't armed at any real immediate threat to anyone. And if that's the case, then let us see the body, you know, and let other people decide that. But we ask that you, the cops at least, ask that question. And that's
okay, so you're saying that, now, I did talk, I will say this, I spoke with the Monk's Corner, South Carolina Police Department, and I'll be honest with you, Captain Murphy probably should not be a captain. He was very rude, and really I don't think he understands what his job is. I think he thinks the police department is his. I'm just going to put that on the record. But Lieutenant Bowen was very accommodating and did get me the things that I did request through the Freedom of Information Act. However, they did not want to make a statement. I asked Captain Murray, would he make a statement about anything, and he did not, but they did provide the police report. They also did provide a copy of the Castle Doctrine, the actual law itself. They provided that. They would not basically discuss the investigation other than to tell me that it was an ongoing investigation. However, you say they told you that it's an open and shut investigation and there's nothing to talk about. Is that correct?
Yes, and that's also told that to the Post and Courier. That's documented. That's not just me saying that. It's documented. They said the only investigation they were investigating is why the house itself was targeted. They said as far as the death of Mr. Gaston, they felt it was justified. It was open and shut, and it's in quotations, open and shut. So that's what we're concerned about, you know, because there are questions that are open and shut. Like, say he shot, they would have seen that he was shot in the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're saying that there's no need to even ask any questions. There's no need to do any investigation because the Castle Doctor says that it's okay. And yet we want to say, okay, if he was shot in the back of the head, at least you should be asking a lot more questions than you're asking, rather than saying, well, we're not going to ask any.
Okay, so you're saying there was no an investigation at all. You feel like, period, from what they told you, there was no investigation.
That's exactly what, that's written in the paper, in the news reports. So we saw that coming down, that they said, and that's another part. Like, again, if my nephew was in this house illegally, burglarized or whatever it may be, with, you know, a cop who would have, you want to say that nobody in their right mind would be foolish to go in and justify that, because if somebody broke in my house, I'm not family member or not. I'm not going to sit there and just say, oh, yeah, go ahead and take what you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the fact of the matter is there are, you can use excessive force, you know. And we just want to make sure, like, if somebody shot in the back of the head and they're unarmed, you want to make sure that the force justifies, you know, the danger that this person is facing. And the Castle Doctrine talks like that. The Castle Doctrine doesn't say somebody coming out, just shoot him. Okay, so if he came in your house, decided he wanted to watch a football game, and they said, oh, he's in your house illegally, you tell him you can go pick up a gun and shoot him in the back of the head and say that's okay? And the family should wonder, okay, well, why would you do that? You know, oh, well, he had a business in my house. Or he stole from, what was his intent? Yeah, well, maybe he decided to do that, and, you know, and nobody's justified the fact he had a business in your house. The fact of the matter is, was the force justified is what the question we think that should have been asked. And the way they use in that that Castle doctrine basically says that it doesn't matter what type of force is used. And that's what we dispute, because if you want to say that, the Castle doctrine clearly makes it very explicit as far as the lawful use of excessive, meaning you could have unlawful uses of excessive force. And that's what we're concerned about. Why would you not ask that? We're not telling you what excessive force is and not under these circumstances, because we haven't seen a body. We don't know. We don't
we're
going
to take
you know
a phone call. We're going to go to area code 908-494. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Wanda Bull.
Hi,
and
how are you, Wanda?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for calling.
My condolences go out to the family of the young man. I've tried to follow this story from the very beginning, and I've had a chance to listen to Tyler speak. And I agree with everything that Tyler is saying. This young man needs to have some justice. There needs to be an investigation. There should have been an investigation right at the very beginning. There should have been an autopsy done. Because without the autopsy, there's no way that you can prove if Tyler tried to turn and run and this is how he was hit in the back of his head, or if he was actually marched down to the bottom of the stairs and possibly shot that way. Without an investigation, you leave open for us to think anything could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And for the family to just now be getting all of this information, you were able to get police reports. Did the family have a police report before this? I don't understand why they have to go through so much.
Tyler, I believe you all were supplied with a police report, a copy of the police report, correct?
We had to get that. We got that from the press, from Mr. Eddie Perez. Well, me and my brother was told to go get the police report initially. We were met with hostility, surrounded by the police officers that they want to assault us in there. And we were, again, afraid for our lives because, we are on familiar territory. We were invited there to come get the police report. And you would wonder if this was a setup. You know, the way in which we were provoked. And I told the chief at the time and Lieutenant Roach when he was there, we're not here for any drama. We just can't. You told us came from, but Lieutenant Roach, you can't come down here demanding. I said, sir, we're not demanding anything. I said, you told us. Okay, you gave us the address to come here. So that doesn't make sense. If somebody invites you to their house, let's say for dinner, and then you say, oh, I'm so hungry, you sit down to eat, and they start yelling at you saying, get up, you ain't got no business demanding anything. You're going to wonder
exactly
what the world is going on.
Right.
And it didn't make sense to us. And again, when stuff don't make sense to people, most people ask questions because it just don't make sense.
And so you're just saying you just want to know and that you don't understand why they just can't be forthcoming about whatever happened.
That's what we said from the very beginning. Because, again, we had no reason to discredit them. We had no reason not to believe them. But when you tell me your statements are inconsistent, then I ask you a question. If somebody try to tell you that 1 plus 1 equals 6, and they get mad with you because you tell them, okay, why would you say that when they equal 2? And they get mad at you, they want to get hostile. You're going to wonder something's wrong. It's going to make you wonder, okay, why are you trying to convince me that it's 6? Why don't you do me a favor? Why don't you show me how you came to that conclusion? And it's like, we ain't telling you nothing. It's open and shut. And it's like, it leaves us even more broken because we've already suffered the loss. We've already been hurt. We're still hurting. And now it's like, we're not even going to help you heal no more. We could care less about healing no more.
Mm-hmm.
And we wonder, why are you so inhumane? Why is that the case?
Wow. You have anything else you'd like to say, Ms. Bull?
I just think that this is a serious, this also brings light on the Castle Doctrine in itself, because it appears that what it does is that it almost gives homeowners the right to be vigilantes in their homes.
Mm.
And that can never be good.
I agree. We're going to go to the 911 tape in just a second. if Ms. Science would pull it up, we're going to let you listen to the 911 tape. We, you know, listening to it, it gives me an image, and I wonder if it gives that to everyone else once you hear the 911 tape for yourself. You know, it is what it is. Thank you, Ms. Bull, for your comments. We're going to go to the 911 tape at this time, and we're going to let you all listen for yourself and hear. Ms. Lyons, your line is open. We're going to let you all hear for yourself the 911 tape, and you decide, based on that, what you think happened that day. Are you there, Ms. Lyons?
My room, and there was a black gentleman with his gun. Please get somebody over here.
I'm getting somebody over there, sir. Is he still in your house?
Yeah, I got him.
Okay, sir, we're going to get EMS and everything on the way.
And that black mask and everything, please get him. He's running now. He's got a gray and black sweatshirt on.
Okay, sir, is he on the floor, or is he running, or what's he doing, sir?
There was two of them. He's going to Francis Marion.
And they're going to Francis Marion what?
He's running down to Francis Marion Boulevard. He's in Stony Landis.
All right, did you hit him, sir?
Yeah, I hit one of them. There were two of them. I heard the other one upstairs.
All right, sir. We're going to get him on the way. I'm getting him on the way right now, okay?
Okay, thank you. Get him here.
Yes, sir. Hold on 1 second. Just stay on the line with me, okay?
Okay.
Well, did you see the other fellow fall? Was he in the yard, or is he still running?
He was in the house.
I mean, where is he at now?
He fell in my house. I got the hell out of there. There was a guy upstairs. I didn't know what he had. Like I said, the other one had the shotgun on the ground there. Like I say, he was upstairs. I could hear him coming down. I was getting the hell out of there. I didn't know whether he had a gun or what.
Okay, sir. And you said it was two black males?
Well, I know it was one black male. He had a black thing on his head. And he was covered. He had like a veil over him. It was a black guy. And like I say, he saw me. I saw him. He had the shotgun in his hand, and I fired. And he went down. And then the other one, I could hear him coming down. So I got the hell out the front door.
All right, sir. The subject that you shot at, where is he at? I mean, is he?
I believe he's still in my house. I don't know. I got out of there.
Okay.
I'm telling you, I didn't want to get in the gunfire.
So it's one of the subjects that's running towards Francis Marion, correct?
Yeah, he was running out of the neighborhood.
Is your gun that you shot him with still in the house, or do you have it? Or
it in my hand.
Okay, you need to set it down. We got the officers on the way. I don't want them, you know, anything to go on.
That's fine, sir. I'm next door.
All right, sir. What kind of clothes was the subject in that run towards Francis Marion?
Would it have a green sweatshirt on?
You said a green shirt?
Black and gray sweatshirt. Long sleeve, two-tone. If I said a gentleman, I don't know. Like I said, I hear him. I don't know whether he's still down in the house or not. Get somebody here, bro.
Yeah, just put it in there. It's a black and gray sweatshirt that the one subject going towards Robin Francis Marion is in.
Yeah, he's going out of Stone Atlantis.
All right, sir. All right, stay out your side of your house and we'll get him to check on the fella.
Okay.
In your house. You said you didn't see him come out your house?
The one in the black veil and everything, no. I don't think he's come out. Like I said, he went down. He went down.
Okay, y'all, that's the 911 tape. Mr. Williams, what do you think when you hear that tape?
What's that?
What do you think when you hear that tape?
It's just disturbing. I mean, it's just disturbing. It's just disturbing. It's just disturbing. Because
okay.
I just think that at the end, it's hard to even listen to it because, like, at the end of the result, my nephew was dead, shot in the back of the head, and that's the only thing when I hear that.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to really hear anything that I'm hearing in that. You know what I mean? And I know it sounds crazy, but it's, you know what I mean? It's the reality of my nephew is not here. He shot in the back of the head. It's just making more, you know.
Right, right.
Like this guy, it sounds like, you know, he's really, you know, he's really concerned or you know, it
too
sounds
far.
Like that. So
too
exactly.
Far.
So we just want to make sure, like I said, that everything, like I said, is the questions that we have answered, you know, is just answered, you know, that if he thought like he was in danger, that when we, you know, can we see my nephew, you know, so we, like I said, some questions are answered that we have.
Okay. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLHT 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for tonight's topic, Bobby Gaston shooting, justified or homicide. If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390. And again, press 1. A reminder, the chat room is open tonight, so if you have a question or a comment, post it up in the chat room, and I will try to pose your questions or your comments to Mr. Williamson. If he chooses to answer, he will. If not, there are certain things that they have said is off limits tonight, and we do understand and respect that. If you are just tuning in and you are not familiar with the Bobby Gaston shooting, it happened April 13th in Monk's Corner, South Carolina, where a Cecil Barwick says that he was in his home shaving and heard a noise. And he says that he went to his window to discover that his family member was not driving up as he thought it was, so the noise was not them. So he contends at that point he armed himself and he stumbled upon Bobby Gaston in his home, and he says at that point, I'm assuming they met eye to eye or at some point they confronted each other in some manner, and he said he heard another noise upstairs, which indicated to him somebody else was upstairs. So at this point, he shoots Bobby. He says he flees the home, goes to the neighbor's house to call 911. The other person that was in the home left on foot and was later apprehended, and I think the third person turned themselves in. Which brings the question up, where is the other two suspects, Mr. Clifford Ramsey and Tyler McCoy? Where are they today? Do we know the
choice? They're in the correctional facility, Fink. I forgot the full name of it, but it's the Fink Correctional Facility, I believe. They're in jail, basically.
Okay, they're in jail. Mm-hmm. Do we know if they made a statement at all about what's happened?
The police won't release it. They're just saying things like they cooperated. But we have no way, again, without a statement of them being released officially, and because they remanded without bail and family, not able to go and visit them, it's a little difficult for anybody to tell what they're saying. They're not able to make calls out. And even if they were, they knew it would be monitored. So, it's just a bad situation because, again, those are questions we would like answered. And
okay. So their family members cannot visit them or talk to them over the phone?
No. From what we understand, I've been in contact with one of the mothers, and that's the statement that I was told. And I have no reason not to believe her. Again, making this, okay, I don't take necessarily people's word, even when we got the word that my nephew was shot in the back of the head, I'm not going to take anybody's word when the cops are saying, you know, something else, or even if they're tight-lipped and not saying anything. I'm not going to take and run with that. But, you know, I'll say, hey, I heard this. Can you, you know, I don't want that question over my head. And when I ask the authority, can you tell me that? The coroner, can you tell me that? And when I see I'm being met with hostility, then, you know, it makes me laugh. It's like, wait a minute, you're going to leave me thinking that I don't know whether or not, well, he got shot at, if you got somebody telling me, you know, he got shot in the back of the head, and then later on when you find out that the press is willing to print that we heard this and now we can't see the body to confirm it, because we'll tell everybody once we got out that, you know, that, hey, he didn't get shot in the head, you know, so whoever's spreading that lie, stop spreading it, because it's dividing the community, and we're not here for that. I'm a minister of, you know, the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm not here to bring division, but to, you know, to bring healing to people and to bring comfort to people. And if people are going to be anything that's going to make people upset, unfortunately, asking questions seems to make people upset. And I can't help that if asking questions is going to cause my sister to be at peace and lay her son to rest, who was shot in the back of the head while he was unarmed, then guess what? You're going to be upset. But my first duty is to make sure my family is at peace. And right now they're not. Right now everybody's troubled. Right now they're afraid for their lives. So we don't want to be in the – I'm with Southern South Carolina. I don't want my family in a hostile environment. If we can just get my nephew, you know, get the question, get out of here, then they can sleep at night and we can lay my nephew to rest. And that's all we want. And it seems like people are upset because that's all we want. How is that hard to understand? If that was you or your son, I would care if you were white, green. I would go out of my way to help bring you closure and to get those answers for you.
Well, let me, and I understand that you all were seeking answers, and that is why you all put up the Facebook page, Justice for Bobby Gaston. But I will be honest with you, I have been very disturbed by some of the comments that I read on that page, and I know a lot of them you deleted because they were very insensitive, they were very disrespectful to the dead as well as to the family. And I'll be honest with you, I can't even believe grown people will create fake Facebook pages only to be mean-spirited to a family that's going through what you all are going through. I can see if you don't agree with what happened, if you feel that Bobby did something wrong. I think his family has never said anything other than that. But for you all to come onto the page, be mean-spirited, say some of the things that you said, and then create another page, and I won't even mention what the other page is on Facebook, but I think it shows utter disrespect. I'll be honest with you, and I've never seen, and I've carried stories like this before, and I've never seen this type of ignorance, I'll be honest with you, in my life. And so I don't understand, I don't even understand the purpose. If you all say that Bobby Gaston got what he deserved, then there's no point for you to comment further, I would think. But for you to go as far as to create a fake page, and most of you all did create fake pages. And so for you all to create Facebook pages and then be mean-spirited and do some of the things that you've done, I've often wondered, why did you even leave it up, Tyler, because I haven't understood how you have even been able to read some of the nasty comments that have been made.
Well, that's a very good question, but the way I look at it is this, in life, there will be situations, circumstances that arise that you just don't agree with. So I've become accustomed to thriving in an environment to where I understand it may not be conducive to exactly what I want, maybe what I want to hear, but you look for the positive things. And there are some positive comments on Facebook.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I try not to focus on that, just like the hurt and the pain. And, you know, I could be angry that I don't have my nephew here, but the reality is, like I said, we never disputed he was in the wrong place one time. We never disputed his motive because that's not what we're here for. You have authorities for that. They have courts and jails for that. And unfortunately, I've done wrong things in my life that I could have been incriminated, been in jail for, illegal. They were straight up illegal. But so a lot of people, when they make comments like, once a criminal officer, well, that's not always true because there are many people that have criminal records that are now great role models to society and to their communities. So for us to have that stereotype, it's not right. It's labeling to somebody and saying they don't deserve answers to, you know, to questions, reasonable questions. Not asking, like, was the guy racist? I mean, that's an unreasonable question because whether or not he was a racist has nothing to do with if somebody's in the house and they have no business in there. So that's not a question we were asked. That's not a question we would even endorse somebody asking because it's irrelevant. You know, people ask, well, what was his criminal record? That's irrelevant because it's not as if he went in that house and said, here's my rap sheet. Why don't you decide the level of threat I am to you and your family based on that? So that's an irrelevant question. The only questions we have is, again, why was there no questions asked, and this was considered open and shut, when a young man's body is laying lifeless on this floor with a bullet hole in the back of his head, unarmed? Why are there no questions? And then when we ask those questions, we are confronted with hostility. We're not coming to anybody ever with hostility. The coroner said at one time that I was very hostile or upset because he got on the phone with my sister who asked, where did my nephew get shot at? And he was very, very rude with her and I pulled the phone from him and I said, why are you talking to my sister like that? She is grieving. Talk to me. And he said, I'm not talking to you. So it's as if he was refusing to be sensitive to her plight. And that, again, causes me to wonder, why are you doing that? We have nothing against you. You really should have nothing against us because you don't know us. We lost somebody. We want to get him out of here so we can lay him to rest. And people say he's not going to have rest as long as his Facebook page is up. This Facebook page, again, was not created for debate or forum. We said that on there. We said it multiple times. But there are people that refuse to respect that. And unfortunately, we live in a society where there exists some disrespectful people. And I don't care how much you beg, plead, and prod with them. If that's who they want to be, that's what they want to be. But who they are has no dictation as to who I am and my family, who we are, who we're going to be. If we're going to show mercy and compassion and love to people, that's what we're going to do. Even when you do things against us, that's what we're going to do. There were people that said negative stuff about us, called me a crackhead. I've never smoked crack a day in my life. However, you don't see me going and calling people racist, crackheads. That's not what we do. My pastor, Hersey Taylor, in Newark, New Jersey, at Wells Cathedral, he taught us that. You do not treat people. You're not judged based on how people treat you, but you sure are judged at how you treat people. And so we go out our way to listen to people, even if they disagree with us. I'll listen to you. As long as you're not cussing me out or cussing my family out or my friends, I will listen to you all day. Even if you tell me that everything I'm saying is a lie and you can give me facts and proof, we need it because that brings closure. It may not be what I want to hear. How many people went to a doctor, got a bad report? It wasn't what you wanted to hear, but the news helped you because you were able to get the treatment or the surgery that you needed because you put yourself in a position to hear what you did not necessarily feel you were strong enough to take. And so...
And I'm agreeing with you on that point. And I'm going to tell you what I noticed. And I'm going to say this because I didn't like what they posted about me on the other page today. And the thing is, I have a right to do a show on whatever I choose to do a show on. And so I think the fact that, first of all, they have so many comments to say, but they're cowardly in the way they do it. It's no different than the Klan wearing a sheet on his head and calling himself a Klan with a sheet on, but when he comes out, he's your doctor and he's your lawyer. So I'm saying you're cowardly in the way that you did that. Now, I'm just putting it out there. What you say about me, I didn't appreciate it, so I'm putting it out there. Take your sheet off tonight if you like and call in, but don't talk dirt or trash on this man's Facebook page and then talk about me on your page, but then you're too cowardly to call in tonight and make some of the racist and ignorant, as you all call the other page, you call the Justice for Bobby Gaston's page ignorance, but I am here to tell you I read a lot of ignorance on the other page. I'm going to go to the phone lines, area code 843-697. Good evening, you're on Center Stage.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, how are you?
Good. I live close by where this happened at. I've been watching the Facebook pages. I haven't liked any of them.
Okay.
Haven't commented on any of them. What I'm seeing, I'd like to give my condolences to both families.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Barwick has to live with it the rest of his life. As far as the Castle doctrine goes, Mr. Tyler keeps saying that Bobby was unarmed. He wasn't. He's carrying a butterfly knife. He supposedly had a gun. If somebody were to break into my house and I didn't know them, but I saw them dressed in black, their face covered, I have to assume the worst. And unfortunately, I would have done the same thing. If Bobby was shot in the back of the head, how did it occur? If Bobby see him pull the gun up and start to turn to run, I don't know. Nobody knows. It's a shame. It's a damn shame. It's what it is. All this stuff is pulling this town apart as far as I'm concerned.
It is.
I've lived here just a few years. It's a nice, peaceful, quiet town. The Facebook pages, both of them, especially the Justice one, got out of control. All of the talk about Mr. Barwick being a cop, about a white man, about a black man, and all the rest of this, it's ridiculous. It should have been taken down. That is not justice for Bobby. That's not justice for anybody.
But, caller, no, wait a minute, caller. But I've read the other page. And to be honest with you, they both had issues. And the other page, in my opinion, was extremely racist. I mean, extremely racist. So, caller, I don't know that you can say really one was worse than the other because they both were bad at points. Now, Mr. Williams did at times go and remove posts so that it would not be so hostile on his Facebook page. You have to give him credit for that. Whereas the other page, it just it seems like it's never-ending negative comments about Bobby, about his life, about his family, uncalled for. And I will go on record as saying that. I mean, call it what it is.
Are you talking about the one that's true for Bobby?
Yes.
Yeah. That one there, when I first started reading it, it was pretty clean initially. There was no racist comments. There were a couple racist comments brought in from a couple of people that came from the other site. I did see that. But it goes both ways, you know. I'm not blaming one race or the other. It's ridiculous. This race thing anymore needs to go away. You know, if you want to talk race, well, then a black man went into a white man's house to rob him. I mean, it can get so stupid, you know. A man went to rob another man, and a man lost his life is what's happening.
Is it okay?
No.
Is it okay for me to address?
Pardon me?
I just wanted to see before I forget. If it's okay, I'll wait. But I just wanted there was something that Vanessa, we appreciate the condolences, but I wanted to address something before I forget. If that's okay, if not, I'll hold it.
Okay, go ahead,
Tom. Okay, first, I appreciate the caller. And, again, he said something that really stuck with me. He said that Mr. Barwick has to lose his life. I agree with that. We're not making out Mr. Barwick to be a beast. And, again, I corrected post that where people went on to say he was a cop, and I made that perfectly clear. There are people going to post on a whole lot of stuff that we don't endorse. And, unfortunately, with trying to make arrangements to see his body and talking to the press and talking to authorities and controlling family members, we can't delete every post. But I went on the record on the Facebook multiple times saying we don't endorse this particular statement. We don't endorse that and deleting as much as I can. So we never, me or my friend, never said that Mr. Barwick was a cop. There's no record that we ever said that. So we understand that. The other thing is you said yourself, what people don't realize, Mr. Barwick has some sense of closure because he knows what happened. He was in the house. But then you said to yourself, did he turn his head when he got shot in the back of the head? I don't know. Did this happen? I don't know. See, that's the problem. There are questions that's not answered. Those are legit. It does matter if he was turning his head. It does matter if he was running. And so because of that, we want those. See, they may seem like because these questions exist, they don't matter because he was in the house. No, it do matter. It does matter. And so because of that, that's what we're saying. How could the officers on the scene give us the closure Mr. Barwick had? Let us see. Tell us and let us see if he was turning. We have questions and they're not answering it and they're getting mad with us. It would be like you're saying, you know, the caller, I didn't catch his name, but him asking the authorities, okay, we don't know if he turned his head. We don't know if he did. He called in the police chief and asked, or the Lieutenant Bauer and said, hey, what happened? And greeted with hostility. That will raise a red flag to you.
Can I interject?
Yes.
I have a question for the caller.
Okay.
The caller mentioned a butterfly knife, and also in the 911 report, it mentioned Mr. Barwick mentioned Bobby having a shotgun in his hand. And I understand that you do have the report. You were given a copy of the report.
I was, yes.
Okay. I would like to ask the caller first and foremost where he got his information about the butterfly.
Caller, are you?
I don't remember. I don't remember if it was on the news in the newspaper. I to be honest with you, I don't know. But what
I'm not sure that information was actually in the news or the newspaper. So I was interested to know. I did not see that mentioned anywhere in any news or any newspaper. So I was just wondering where you got that information.
Like I said, I couldn't tell you exactly where I got it from, but that's my understanding that he had a butterfly knife, he had a pair of handcuffs, and a cell phone on him.
Also, it mentioned that he had those items in his pocket.
Well, granted,
when they found him, he was not carrying those items. There was no threat. Sir, there was no threat.
How can you say that? I mean,
because the man,
how do you know what the intentions of a person in your house is? How can you?
Because, sir, at the moment he tried to flee, he removed any presence of danger.
You do not know that you were not there.
You weren't there, but you know it. You know what he was doing when he tried to turn?
No, I don't know what was going on. I wasn't there. Bobby was there, Mr. Barwick was there. As far as the police not releasing any information, is it because there's an ongoing investigation and they can't let anything out? I don't know. You know, so much of this has been speculation. It's speculation, speculation.
Okay. We listen to you. Can I speak now? Thank you. The 911 call was transcribed, a part of it, where Mr. Barwick said, and I'm quoting exactly what was transcribed, "I thought he had a shotgun on him, and I shot him."
Mm.
Now, I saw this rifle is what it actually was. You could see this rifle from a mile away. You can't get that confused.
Mm.
In the heat of the moment, in the heat of passion, whatever, you can't get that confused. He was unarmed. He saw the owner. He tried to flee back up the stairs, and what did the owner do? He shot him in the back of the head. And if the owner was at the bottom of the stairs and Bobby turned to run around,
Zoe's
there was nothing...
Your advocate is trying to say something. Yes, Zoe.
Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt, Ms. Bull. I wanted to, because we're going on speculation and everybody is speculating, and I kind of want to stay too deep from the speculation argument. But to kind of address what Ms. Bull is saying, Carrie, you have a copy of the police report in front of you.
Yes, I do. I'm going to go to Tracy Lines. Your line is open. Can you go to the police report? What part of the police report do you need to have addressed?
Since you have that, I would like for the record for you all to address if there is any mention of any shotgun or any kind of gun in the police report, in the original police report.
Are you there, Tracy?
Yes.
Okay.
Pull it up.
She's pulling it up as we speak.
And the point is that, you know, I think the point is, and I wanna stick to Mr. Williams' point, is that there are questions. And, you know, we understand the Castle Doctrine. None of us are lawyers, but we understand the Castle Doctrine. But we also understand the responsibility of law enforcement to not work in the interest of either one person or another and to just be objective in any kind of dealings that they have. And so the fact that even the caller says that, you know, there's questions, and the fact that the two of them can engage in a debate, a speculative debate, would really suggest that, there are unanswered questions.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are unanswered questions, the question becomes, why wasn't an investigation done? Because the investigation could have put all of the answers on the table and could have put the issue to rest. But the fact is that no investigation was done, a conclusion was drawn, and the bottom line for the family is that the conclusion does not address the question, period. So, I mean, you know, we can all speculate, and I'm sure that as we move along in the discussion, there will be a lot of speculation and hypothetical situations going on and what people would or what people would not do. But the bottom line is that law enforcement has a responsibility to investigate and has a responsibility to protect the interests of all citizens, regardless of the situation. And Bobby Gadsden is a citizen, and his rights should have been protected as well. And had they done an investigation and they had drawn the conclusion that it was justifiable, then, you know, we wouldn't be having this situation right now. But it wasn't done, and that's the point. But back to that, is there any mention of any shotgun or any gun at all in the police report?
She's pulling it up as we speak. I think she's having some problems with her computer, but she's pulling it
up.
But caller, you live how close in proximity to where this happened?
About 500 yards.
About 500 yards. Gotcha. On the same street?
No.
Okay. Gotcha. Did you hear the gunshot that morning?
No, I was working.
You're working. Okay. Are you familiar with Mr. Barwick? Are you friends with him?
Nope. Never met the man.
Okay. So do you feel that, in what you're saying, if I understand you correctly, it is completely okay? What I'm saying, I guess what Ms. Spencer is saying, is that even if he was in your house and you recognize that, you know, he has your belongings, if he has his hands full and he is not a threat to you, you still feel that you would have shot him?
Yes, I would have. Yes, I would have, because I don't know what his intentions are.
Wow.
How many times have home invasions happened where the homeowner has been shot and killed?
Wow.
I am not going to take the time to ask this gentleman, what are your intentions? What do you plan on doing with that gun, knife, whatever it may be?
Okay, caller, are you saying that if he was fleeing, you still would have shot him?
I very well may have. I don't know. I mean, who knows what could happen at that moment?
Wow.
You know, adrenaline's pumping. I don't know, you know?
Okay. Tracy, do you have the police report?
Yes.
Okay. What part do you want to address, Ms. Spencer?
I just want her to point out if there is any section in the police report that states that Mr. Gadsden had any form of gun.
Do you want me to read the police report, or?
I guess people will trust that you can just read it to yourself and see if you see any mention of any gun, any shotgun, any kind of handgun or anything. If the officers that interviewed
me said that the suspect had been shot by the homeowner with a shotgun, and the other suspect was on foot running.
Okay, and there's no indication anywhere in the police report that Mr. Gadsden had a gun or that the officer saw a gun anywhere around his body?
No.
Correct? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So, you know, that then becomes a contradiction, and then I'll just put it to rest at that.
Okay. We're going to go to another call. Thank you so much, caller, for that call. We're going to go to area code 843-480. Good afternoon. You're on Center Stage.
Hi. I would just like to address, the whole Facebook thing.
Okay.
I'd be on Facebook almost every, because, I knew Bobby personally. He was, my best friend or whatever.
Okay.
And, every day when I go on there, it's getting crazy. It's getting kind of out of hand, because, every day I have to go on there and tell people, this page was not created for all the debating and the racist comments and everything. It was created to get answers. We want answers. Why was there no investigation? And it's people don't understand it. They come on there and they comment on saying, well, what would you have done? I'm this is not the page for what would you have done. This page was not created for that. It's not getting in their heads, basically. And to see some of those comments on there, it really hurts me because they're judging him based off something that happened. They didn't know him. For them to come on there and say all the type of stuff they were saying is not right and it's hurtful and it's downright disrespectful to his friends and his family that want answers and that cared about him.
Thank you, caller.
Can I comment on that?
Yes, sir.
Because I know we get a lot of that, and as you can see, I know that was a concern of Jeff. Why would you leave a Facebook page up? Because it gives also the people from outside of this community, Munch Corner, an idea to realize hostility that we're confronted with, because if the people are not saying on Facebook, they're still thinking that in their home. They're still thinking that when we go out to Walmart. They're still thinking that when they see us at McDonald's. And so when we go to places, some people may act out, and the people would think we're not in any harm's way. But there are people that, you know, they're not really that upset. But when you go in there and you see, you know, hundreds of postings with people saying negative things, can you imagine when your face is on the news because you're defending and trying to get answers? What people say, and you don't know today, like you said, the caller said, but somebody, you don't know what they would do. Well, when people are posting racist comments and telling you, calling you a crackhead, and telling you they're not coming to town, you don't know what they would do when you come in there to go to court, or if you come in there to ID your nephew. You don't know what they would do. You don't know what they would do if you go out and say, you know, I want to come out here. I have other family in my corner. I want to come visit them. So just because we question this, we don't know what people are capable of and what they would do. So we live in imminent danger just because we ask these questions. So this allows the public to realize, can you imagine what they're typing on Facebook? And you say, Carrie, you alluded to the people who are cowardly. But the reality is anybody who could shoot somebody and let's say that's fleeing, that's cowardly. You know, many will argue that. That's cowardly. Your life is not a, this person is not a threat to you if they're running from you, and yet you dare to, you know, to shoot an unarmed man in the back and then say, oh, you know, it's okay, he was in my house. That's a sad, again, that sets it up for the vigilante lawlessness, and we don't want that. That's not, because I don't want to live in society. I don't want to raise my kids in a society like that. I don't want my nieces and nephews, you know, whether they make, we, unfortunately, I I'm a minister, like I said, at West Virginia Church of God Christ in Newark, New Jersey, a very violent town. You know, homicide rate is not the best in the country, you know, and with the gang violence. And so we want to make sure that people are protected. You want to make sure that people feel safe. So I'm aware of that. I'm not an advocate for violence. I'm not an advocate for, you know, except for all this. But I am an advocate for, if, like I said, questions need to be answered. You should not be met with hostility for answering a question.
I agree. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new KLAC's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for tonight's topic, Bobby Gaston shooting, justify or homicide. If you're on the phone line and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening via the Internet, dial in at 347-850-8390. And again, press 1. We're down to our last, I guess, over 45 minutes left in the show. If you're in the chat room and have a question or a comment, you need to post it up in chat, and I will try to get it to the family, but they have decided that there are certain questions that are off-limits, and they will not answer them, and I do understand, and I ask you to be respectful of that. We're going to go back to the phone line, and before I do, one thing that we did notice on the police report, it only states that there was $50 that they're saying that was stolen, so we're assuming that they're saying that $50 were taken from the residence, but they gave it back to the homeowner, and it has no mention of the gun, is what I was just texted. And so, basically, I myself am a criminal justice major, and per what I know about crime scenes, you do not give back anything until the investigation has been concluded. I'm just putting that out there. But that's not typical in most law enforcement agencies. If something was taken, it would be put into evidence until the investigation is concluded, and then it would be returned to the homeowner. I'm just putting that out there. Okay, area code 843, good, 480. Good afternoon, you're on center stage. 843-480. Good evening, you're on center stage. Hello? Hello? 843-480. Good evening. Okay, I guess they're having some problems with their phone lines, but they do still appear to be on the line. We're going to go to area code 862-220. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Yes, how you doing? I'm calling. I'm very close to Bobby's mother and his uncle and his aunt, and was close to him when he was younger.
Yeah.
My issue is, why isn't his body being released to his parents so that they can ID him and lay him to rest? I understand that there should be some type of investigation, but to hold on to his body for this long to where he will not be able to be viewed at his homegoing service, this is unfair, and this is not justice for our family. We don't appreciate this.
Okay, Mr. Tyler, can you address that?
Actually, that's for the coroner to address. We have the same question.
Why isn't his body being released? Has this ever been done where a body has been held for this amount of time? Tyler knows me. This is Shaquana Bowman. I'm a very close friend of the family. Everyone knows who I am. So I don't understand it. And my thing is, if he was running or unarmed, if you felt that someone is going to harm you, then you shoot them. But how do you shoot him and he was unarmed? He did not have anything come, he wasn't charging at him or anything. You, if he did have a knife in his hand, you shoot him to disarm him. You don't murder him. You know, how do you just murder someone? You have a, he had a choice to he had a choice to run out of his home or whatever the case may be. He had a choice to shoot him to disarm him, but to shoot him in the back of his head to end his life, to end his life. You know, that's a choice he chose to make. He chose to end Bobby's life. How do you do something like that and then say, oh, I was defending myself? He wasn't charging at you. He was running from you.
Very good question. Family, for those that have tuned in late, if it's okay, we'll do it again. If not, if it's too much for you, we won't. We're going to go back to the 911 tape again. If it's okay, if it's not, we understand. But for all of those that are tuning in late and don't understand why the family is saying maybe the Castle Doctrine does not apply in this situation, maybe this wasn't justified, maybe this was homicide. And so we're just trying to put it out there why they feel the way they do about this Castle Doctrine law and feel that maybe it wasn't justified in this case. Some people were saying on one of the Facebook pages that it was justified homicide. The family doesn't feel that way. They have many questions that remain unanswered. So if it's okay with the family, we'll play it again. If not, we will move on.
You can play it again.
Okay. Ms. Tracy, if you would boot the 911 tape up one more time, because we want those who tuned in late to hear. You never hear, and I'm not judging Mr. Barwick because I don't know what happened that day, but you never hear him in the 911 tape say that the young man lunged toward him. He never says in the 911 tape that the young man was aggressive in any way in his manner toward him. So you do wonder if there was a gray window here in which he could have said, well, listen, I know who you are, because isn't there some information out there, and I don't know, family, you can address this or you can choose to pass on this one. Isn't it some information out there that says that the homeowner knew your relative, Bobby?
Well, we have information that they played football together. They were very close friends. And seen in the neighborhood and in each other's houses on occasion. So that right there would suggest that, I mean, unless the father was never home each time, never knew, never home when Bobby came by, or, you know, again, those are questions we would like asked. You know, ask Mr. Burke, but he's not going on the record saying it. We know that they attended school together. We know that they hung out together. We know this. I mean, so that's not, you know, that's, it would be hard, you know, it would be more likely that he knew him than less likely. But again, that's another question. That's another question that the officers refuse to ask.
Okay.
You know, and that's what we want to know. That's a legitimate question. Did he know him? But again, that's a question for Mr. Barwick. But was that offer presented to him to come on his show? Was the offer presented to the coroner to ask why we wouldn't, the body was withheld for so long? Was that offer extended to them? And if so, Carrie, can you tell the listeners what was the response for the Barwick family or representation, if they have any, or what was the response of the coroner when you invited them, or did you even not invite them to come on?
I invited the coroner, and he said he had no comment whatsoever. I invited Mr. Murray to make a comment, and if he wasn't going to make a comment to me off the record, I knew he wasn't going to make one on the record. And I did try to locate the Barwick family, as a matter of fact, via White Pages, and I found nothing. We skip traced every way we could, and we could not find them, so we did not pursue it any further. But if someone would like, we still have time left in the show. If someone knows the Barwick family and would like them to have them, would like to call them and have them call in, we'd be glad to hear what Mr. Barwick has to say tonight. We're not trying to not show balance in our reporting. We would love to know what happened that night. And since the police department told Mr. Tyler Williams that the investigation is closed, that means that Mr. Barwick is free to talk. So if you know him, if you're in the chat room, one of you that know him, or if you're listening via the phone and you know Mr. Barwick, call him up. Tell him we'd like for him to get on the phone lines. Dial us up at 347-850-8390 and tell us what happened that day. We would love to hear it. Otherwise, we're going to go to the 911 tape again, and we're going to let the audience hear what Mr. Barwick said to the 911 operator. Tracy, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to go back to the 911 tape, and we're going to hear what Mr. Barwick, Cecil Barwick, said that day about what happened as far as the shooting was concerned. Okay, we're ready.
I come out of my
sir. We're going to get EMS and everything on the way. Okay, sir. Is he on the floor or is he running or what's he doing, sir?
There was two of them. He's going to Francis Marion.
And they're going to Francis Marion what?
He's running down to Francis Marion Boulevard. He's in Stony Landing.
All right, did you hit him, sir?
Yeah, I hit one of them. There were two of them. I heard the other one upstairs.
All right, sir. We're going to get him on the way. I'm getting him on the way right now, okay?
Okay, thank you. Get him here.
Yes, sir. Hold on one second. Just stay on the line with me, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so well, did you see the other fellow fall? Is he in the yard or is he still running?
He was in the house.
One person upstairs who he never, per what I understood, saw. And then, you know, when he spoke of, he shot, you know, Bobby Gaston, I never heard him say, Bobby Gaston came toward me, he pointed anything at me, he aggressively pursued me. I'm just saying. I'm just putting the information out there. If you just tune in, you're listening to the all-new KLHT's 98.9 The Talk, bringing you center stage for tonight's topic, the Bobby Gaston shooting. Justified or homicide? If you're on the phone lines and have a question or a comment, press 1. Or if you're listening in via the internet, dial in at 347-850-8390, and again, press 1. A reminder, the chat room is open tonight, so if you have a question or a comment, you can post it up in chat, and I will try to pose it to the family, but they have said that there are certain questions and comments that they will not respond to, and we have agreed to that in advance. I'm sorry, my person who read the police report for me said that the gun was on the ground. Does it say a rifle was on the ground or a gun was on the ground? She's telling me that the gun was on the ground. Was it a gun on the ground or a rifle on the ground?
She said the shotgun is on the ground.
The shotgun is on the ground. So that's in the police report. Or was that in the
911 tape?
Oh, in the 911 tape. Okay, so he's saying that the shotgun was on the ground. So that does not indicate that anybody is pointing it at you. But it's up to, you know, your interpretation of what you heard, but that's what we just heard. We're going to go back to the phone lines. We're going to go to area code 240-351. Good evening. You're on center stage. Good evening. 240-351. We're going to close back that phone line. We're going to go to area code 862-220. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Yes, this is, okay, I heard that he said that there was a shotgun on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Was it allegedly Bobby's or someone else's? Because he's saying he never seen the other guy run, who else was in the house. He never seen anybody else. He never seen Bobby with a gun. Bobby never pointed anything at him. They said he was unarmed. When his body was found, he was unarmed. So how is this justified?
Okay, and that's a very good question. And I do have one more document to read from, Ben. Tracy, if you could pull up the official police report. The official statement that was released by the police department. I think that this was dated April 13th. The official statement that was released. And I believe some of these statements were in this official statement that they released. Now, I don't know if they released this via the media in terms of on the news or to the newspaper because I'm not in your local area. But that was, it sounds like something that I got from the original official statement. But you would think that if that were the case, that should have been in the police report. But it was not. So what happened in the official statement does not coincide with what was written in the official press release that was given out from the Monk's Corner Police Department on April 13th. Let me ask you, family, did you all receive the official police press release?
The official press release? No.
Yes.
We received a copy of the incident report for a gift from Andy Perez at the Post and Courier newspaper. Because, like I said, the way the hostility that the police department showed us, Lieutenant Roach, and the staff, as you know, all officers were coming out to surround us, and they were going to jump on us. Even though the chief of police, Caldwell, invited us back the next day, they were going to get the police report. There was no way we were going back there physically to get a police report after that.
Okay. I think what they released to me was the official press release. They released to me the official police report, and then they gave me a copy of the Castle Doctrine. And we're going to go over the Castle Doctrine in just a little bit for anybody who may not know exactly what that says. And we're not going to read it in its entirety because it's pretty lengthy. But we're just going to go over how Mr. Williams feels that the Castle Doctrine, per the way he interprets it, is not something that covers what they did to Bobby. Is that correct, Mr. Williams?
Yes. Yeah, okay.
Okay, we're going to give Tracy time to find the official press release that they gave. If you would tell us what you understand the Castle Doctrine to say, Mr. Williams.
Like I said, it is pretty lengthy, but I focus on because when a lethal weapon, when Mr. Barber chose to arm himself or pick up a lethal weapon, when you pick up a lethal weapon, that means there's a potential that you're going to use lethal force. And so even though the Castle Doctrine may be pretty lengthy, it gives very explicit details on the lawful use of lethal force. And so the minute you pick up a lethal weapon, at that point, I think that portion of the law is where you should focus on because a lethal weapon was picked up and a lethal weapon was used. And so at that point, I think it's only reasonable that you would look at that portion of the law because that is the portion that is applicable and it clearly defines what is justifiable. And so we're not questioning. Again, the question is because of those unknown answers, we don't know if it's justified or not. We cannot definitively say this was not justified, but we should be able to, just like the officers, just like Mr. Barwick, even though he may have this thing over the rest of the night, he know what happened. But because we get these inconsistencies, we don't know. And we need to know. And if it is what it is, again, there are people in this very well-educated, very compassionate people in the state of South Carolina in high office. And so if those people are not complicit in anything, they, take a look at that. That's all we want to know. These some legitimate answers that we should they should have been asked from the beginning. We don't know why they were not asked in the beginning. I really don't care why they were not asked in the beginning. I just care that their answer so we can lay my nephew, who was shot in the back of the head, unarmed, to rest.
Okay. We've got the press release ready. This is the question. And like I said, I was a criminal justice major. I don't understand why a press release would indicate anything that a police report didn't. And I believe what we're going to read from, as far as the press release is concerned, it does not coincide with what the police report says, which raises a question. How does the press release say something that the official police report does not? And I will ask you, is there a second police report? Because I was only given one, and I got mine as late as yesterday. Okay, obviously there's not. Okay, Tracy, if you would read from the official press release and tell us what that says.
Okay, Monk's Corner, April 13, 2011. The Monk's Corner Police Department is investigating a burglary that occurred on Cooper River Boulevard, located off of Rembrandt C. Dennis Boulevard. Chief Chad Caldwell states that this department responded to a 911 call that came in about 8:41 a.m. The officers were advised that there was a burglary in progress. They were also told that the homeowner was present during the break-in. Officers arrived on the scene and found the homeowner, white male, approximately 50 years of age, coming from a neighbor's residence. The homeowner was visibly shaken and upset. Officers learned that the homeowner had come out of his bedroom only to hear unknown voices in the upstairs area of his residence. Once he realized that it was not a family member, he became afraid for his safety. The homeowner armed himself and went to the back of the house. He heard rustling and footsteps. He was then approached by a suspect, black male, approximately 20 years of age. The suspect had a long gun and a black nylon bag in each hand. He was dressed in all black. Two included gloves and a rag for a mask. In fear of his life, the homeowner fired towards the suspect. After hearing more rustling upstairs, the homeowner fled. A neighbor spotted a second suspect, black male, approximately 20 years of age, fleeing from the resident. The suspect ran in the direction of Stony Landing Road. The Berkeley Intermediate School, as well as the local daycare, was placed on lockdown for safety reasons. Officers cleared the house for possible other suspects. The first suspect was found dead from a shotgun. Both the long gun and the black nylon bag were found by his side. With the help of the Berkeley County Sheriff's Office K-9 unit, the second suspect was located in the area of Rembrandt C. Dennis and By Low Drive. He was taken to a local emergency room and cleared for incarceration. This event is under investigation at this time. Investigators are trying to determine if it was a random act or was the resident targeted for some reason. No charges are pending at this time.
Okay. Family, is that the first time you all heard that?
No.
Yeah, okay. So, now my question, the first red flag to me is, that's not what the police report says.
Go ahead.
I mean, I'm just saying it does not...
Go ahead.
The police report does not mention all the facts that the press release mentions, which somebody did some very sloppy reporting on their police report if they did not mention all of that, but they released that to the press.
Right.
Correct.
So,
and that's, again, another question that should be answered. How is that possible?
I want to point out, Terry, because I want to stick to the objectivity of it all, that all of the things that and I want to speak to the Castle Doctrine, and I'm a sociology professor and not an attorney, so I'm speaking of it from a research perspective and not as an attorney. However, when you're looking at the Castle Doctrine and for South Carolina specifically, a South Carolina Code 16-11-440, it speaks about an imminent threat to the life and or general well-being of the individual or that of his or her family. And that really is the premise of the Code for South Carolina, and it's the premise of the Castle Doctrine or the Castle Law. The core is that the threat has to be an imminent threat. That means that the person has to have a reasonable fear that his or her safety, life, or general well-being is being threatened at that time, at the time of the response. the core is it doesn't say anything about protecting property. And when I'm listening to the comments and the different debates about the Castle Doctrine, you know, citizens are tending to believe that just because someone comes into your house or violates your space, you now have a right to take a life. And I think when we get to the point where we place property values above human life, that's sketchy. Now, if someone is posing a threat to your life or is posing a threat to your family's life, then that's what the doctrine is designed to do, give you the right to protect yourself and your family within your domain without having to suffer legal consequences. However, when you look at the Gadsden case specifically, if you look at all of the things that are going on, the report, the press release that you talked about, even if you listen to the 911 tape, and then you go to the report and you find that there is no mention of any gun, there is no mention of any mask or anything else anywhere in the police report that the officers and the occupant are attesting to, again, that brings question, and that's the point. You know, is this a justifiable homicide? Did he reasonably fear for his life and or his personal safety? Or as the previous caller indicated, and you know, this is the thing that we get into, you can get angry that somebody is coming into your house and taking your stuff, but that does not, under the code or the Castle Doctrine, give you the right to take a life. And I think we have to remember that we are talking about Bobby Gadsden Jr. He is a human being who lost his life over, at this point, nothing. Over nothing. Because he was in someone's house. So
okay,
that,
what we're going to do, though, and I just thought about it, because we do not want to leave anybody, and I'm reading some of the comments in the chat room, we don't want to leave anybody with this thought that we're leaving something out. So we're gonna also have Tracy bring up the police report as well, simply because the police report, the press release, and everything else should match. That I do know. And there should not be any gray areas where guns were left off, or masks or gloves or anything like that, handcuffs on one, not on the other. That's just really sloppy police work. And so if you don't want the family to have any questions, then you got to be perfect in your police reporting. And so the police report does not indicate what the press release says, and the press release doesn't indicate what the 911 tape says. So everything says something different. So if you're upset that this family has questions, you might want to start with the reason they have questions is because there's inconsistencies from one reporting to the other reporting. So we're going to go to the phone lines before we have Tracy bring that up. We're going to go to area code 843. Good evening. You're on center stage. Good evening.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm one of Bobby's friends, and
okay.
What I don't understand is how this man was scared, as if he feared his life. This man was a marksman, which means he knows exactly where to shoot somebody to kill them. If this man was scared whenever he looked outside to see if one of his family members was out there,
uh-huh.
Well, then he would have left and called the police. Then he wouldn't have gone back inside and looked for somebody to be in his house.
Now, Colin, when you say he was a marksman, how do you come about that information?
I know his son.
Okay. And so you know for a fact that the father was a marksman?
Yes, the father was a marksman.
Okay. So you feel that day he should have done what?
He should at least shot Bobby somewhere where, you know, he wouldn't have died. I mean, somewhere like you know, in the back, or, you know, where it paralyzes his body. I mean, Bobby didn't deserve to die, whether or not he was in that man's house or not. Bobby should have never been in that man's house to begin with, but for that man to shoot him in the head and kill him, and talk about he was scared, whenever that man walked out of his house to see if his family member was there, he would have called the police then. He wouldn't have gone back inside.
So, okay, there's inconsistencies as to whether or not he left the house or didn't leave the house. Where did some of you all come up with the information that he left the house? Because I've heard that many times, or read that many times on the Internet this week, that he left the house. Where did that come from?
He looked out. It's got it on Live 5 News. It's got it on Live 2 News. It's got it on CNN. It's got it on Post and Courier.
That he left the house and then came back into the house.
Yes, he walked outside to see if one of his family members were outside because he heard all these noises.
Okay. Family, do you want to respond to that caller?
That's another thing that we read. So, again, it's another inconsistency. We brought that up when we talked to Lot 5 as well. The initial press release,
yes.
The video press release that Lieutenant Roach gave right when he immediately took the statement from Mr. Bogwell, he came out, he read it for the press, and that's exactly what he said verbatim. He came out and he used the term, went back in, I believe, three times in that statement. So, and then, you know, it's retracted or not even so much retracted in the press, but, you know, it's just changing. And so that's what we're saying. Did he go in or not? I mean, that's not a mistake that an officer, and I made that statement that with all the homicides, we've been out here over a week now, and every day we see homicides or, you know, violent crimes on the news in Berkeley County and in Munch Corner. They should be professional investigators
yes.
and professionals and experts when it comes to filling out complete police reports. And it's not even something you have to think about. You're writing down what somebody's telling you. So if somebody told you something and it was open and shut and that was on April the 13th, when we talked to you on the 18th or the 17th, it couldn't be any different because you already wrote it down. And you wrote it down based on they told you. So how is it changing? And that's a part I mean, come on, that's a common sense question. How is it changing? If the guy told you that, you only talked to him one time. If you're still talking to him, asking him the same question, why would you be asking him the same question you already asked him?
Right. Thank you, caller. We got to get to some of these phone calls. But before we do, Tracy, can you please read from the police report?
Yes, give me just one moment.
Okay. Because we really want to show you that this family has questions because they don't understand why everything isn't adding up. And so if you have, you know, simple arithmetic skills and you put simple arithmetic equations together and they don't add up, you have a right to ask someone who is supposed to know what happened. And that's all they're doing. And if they're meeting opposition because of that, then something's wrong, y'all. And so I'm not there. I don't know what happened. I don't live anywhere near South Carolina. But at the same time, I know they have every right in the world to ask a question and be given an answer. So, you know, that's just what it is. And so if anybody doesn't understand that, then I think you're wrong. But we're going to go back to the phone lines while Tracy tries to find that. We're going to go to area code 973-380. I'm sorry, some of these numbers, I can't tell if I've been to you already. Have we been to you already, 973-380?
No.
Okay, good evening. How are you?
How are you?
My
name is Alan. My name
okay.
is Alan.
Hi, Alan.
And I'm Bobby's uncle.
Okay.
I used to work for the police department, so I know how investigations should go.
Okay.
And I used to work in a court building, so if any incident should happen, and all police, any law enforcement is taught this, when you go to the academy, before you know they assign you to your job, you're taught how to observe, you're taught how to use good judgment, and you're taught how to write a report. They make sure you do that before you leave the academy, because
mm-hmm.
they can't obviously afford, you know, any lawsuits or anything, like you making mistakes. So when you see a situation to where as you have to write everything down in a report, you put everything that you observed. Also, if you were able to talk to the parties that was involved, you put that in your report. Everything has to be documented from the time, the light of day, what street, everything. And then after that's handed in, then it goes into investigation because they got to make sure that what you said actually matches. And here, you know, the story about my nephew, I have the same questions like, okay, you know, here's a situation where, you know, my nephew is in a man's house. And I heard the young lady say that he was a marked shooter. That's another thing. When you're I'm not going to say that he was a marked shooter because I don't know him. Maybe she knows him better than me. But also, when you're taught, you're also taught, when you're using your firearm, you're taught to shoot at certain targets, I mean, direct on point. And that's if you're shooting somebody at the head or the heart, that's a direct target. That's a shot that you meant to take. If you're scared, you know, because you approached from the, you know, approach with the person, and you just take a shot, you're not aiming at nothing. I mean, the shot could be anywhere because you don't know, like he said, in, you know, when I was reading the 911 call, he just took a shot because he was frightened. Well, when you shoot somebody in the back of the head, that's a direct hit. You know what you're doing. That's something that you initially, you know, you went and took. Another thing I have a question is, besides, you know, the investigation, you know, they said they found a cell phone. I heard one of the callers said something about that. It makes me wonder, like, when we came down here to hear about, to identify the body, how can you identify someone's body if they had no ID on them?
You know, it's a very good question. And so that indicates to me that someone knew him that was at that scene, whether it be the homeowner, the police officer when he arrived, someone, it appears to me, knew him.
Right. So I'm listening to all the stuff that the people are saying, and it's making me have more questions, too. A lot of stuff is arising. It's like, you know, I don't understand. And, you know, if you're doing an investigation, it doesn't take long. Because all of the reports that we've done, even with my coworkers, everything is done right then and there, and it's instant. There's no time frame. It's nothing to think about. If you was there to observe a witness, you write the report. Because if you didn't put everything that is, you know, that was supposed to be in the report, and you took your time writing it, you got to answer to the lieutenant for that.
They neglected to put a rifle in the report, doesn't it seem almost an addendum should have been made to the police report to indicate that these items were not put in the first report and that they're, you know, it was an oversight and they're adding them? Shouldn't that have been stated at some point?
Yes. When you make a report, that's another thing. Like I was saying before, you have to, everything that you observe, everything's supposed to be in the report. There shouldn't be something like, oh, okay, you know, I thought about, like, oh, I forgot to put this in. Because the lieutenant is going to request you, like, what are you doing? I mean, you're writing a report. Why didn't you put this there if it was there from the beginning? You know, you don't want to have to answer that. So when you have a job, when you sit there and you take these reports, you got to put everything that is observed and everything that's there, you have to put it in the report. There shouldn't be no second report or corrections later afterwards, because then that, you know, the lieutenant's going to question your judgment.
Well, let me ask you this. Wasn't Bobby a football star?
Terry, can I comment on what he just said, too? Because I think what he just said is a really, really, really important part that I think people need to understand. You know, there is no second chance, and that is law enforcement training. What he's saying is core. The police report, and even when you start dealing with courts, I mean, this is an admissible document that is highly dependent upon in the court system. So, like you said, officers are trained to observe, and everything that you observe as the first point of entry is included in the report. So there really isn't an addendum like, you know, a law or something that, oh, you know, oops, I forgot. The assumption is that if you didn't observe it and if you didn't include it in the original report, then it doesn't exist. And if you try to do an addendum, then it brings the question, well, why didn't you put this in the report when you first wrote it? Now, when you talk about this case specifically, you're talking about key evidence that would either support or negate justifiable homicide, and that is the imminent threat to the life of the occupant. And the imminent threat is based on the fact that the occupant stated that Mr. Gaston had a gun in his hand, and whether he charged him, pointed it at him or not, if he had a gun in his hand, then you could probably make that argument. However, there is no mention of a gun anywhere near Bobby Gaston's body or anywhere at the crime scene.
Okay, let's see what the police report says, because that's the final piece of the final leg of this. We've already produced for you the 911 tape. We've told you what the press release says. Now we're going to give you what the police report says. Tracy, can you give that to us right now?
Yes. On 4/13/2011, Corporal Zimmerman was dispatched to 1404 Cooper River Bend in reference to a break-in and entering in progress to a residence. Central then advised that one of the suspects had been shot by the homeowner with a shotgun and that the other suspect was on foot running towards Francis Marion Circle and was wearing a gray and color sweatshirt. Upon my arrival, along with Lieutenant Bowen, we met with a white male subject, later identified as the homeowner, Cecil Bardwick. He stated that he had shot an individual in his home near the back door. Lieutenant Bowen and I entered the home through the front door with our firearms drawn. We announced Monk's Corner Police and began checking the inside of the home. I went into the first room, which appeared to be the master bedroom, and checked all the areas in that room. I did not locate anyone. When we proceeded into the kitchen area and as we moved forward to our left was a back door leading to a screen porch. It was in the open position. Lieutenant Bowen observed a black male subject lying face down with his feet closest to the door opening. At this point, Lieutenant Bowen then challenged the suspect, telling him to put his hands behind his back. The subject did not respond. Lieutenant Bowen then challenged the subject a second time with no response. Lieutenant Bowen then covered the subject as I approached and placed handcuffs on the subject, securing him. The subject did not show any signs of movement. We then continued to secure the inside of the home. The inside of the home was found to be secure. Lieutenant Bowen began making phone notifications to the proper individuals. Patrol Leach had also arrived on scene and was instructed to begin roping off the front of the home, securing the crime scene. After securing the rest of the home, I entered back to the subject and began doing a search of his persons and located in the right side jacket pocket a pair of Smith & Wesson handcuffs. In his right lower pants pocket, cargo pants, I located a black and color butterfly knife in the closed position. I then checked the right top pocket of his pants. I found his cell phone, blue in color. I placed all these items on the ground to the left of his person. I then continued to search the subject and located a pair of brown and gold sunglasses wedged under his body midway down in his stomach area, and in his left pocket I found a $1 bill. All items were placed together for evidence purposes. I continued to search the subject for identification and was unable to locate any. At this point, I remained in the rear portion of the house, keeping the subject in view and also securing that portion of the crime scene. Corporal Thompson then arrived and began checking the cell phone for numbers and possible identifying the owner of the phone. Lieutenant Kokinda, BSCO, arrived on the scene and came to the location and took over the crime scene. Lieutenant Kokinda was going to be processing the crime scene, and an incident was turned over to him. Lieutenant Roach and Sergeant Norvell. Supplement to J.R. Leach, 3276-414-2011, on 4/13/2011 at 1820, arrest warrant H758963 was served on Tyler Terrell McCoy. McCoy was located at 300 California Avenue, Hill Finkley Detention Center, and positively identified. The arrest warrant was read to McCoy, and McCoy received a copy. McCoy was booked and lodged.
Okay, the problem I have with that police report is that it never said what happened. And a police report typically isn't it supposed to say what happened? It said what happened when the police arrived. I don't understand what happened in the house that caused the shooting in the police report. Did anybody else catch that? Because I caught that.
Well, yeah, I just have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question as far as what I just heard on front of police report.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem with it. When you have a situation like that involving the death of somebody in your household, when you give your report, you should also supposed to take let me take a breather because it's kind of hard for me to talk now. I'm kind of breathing funny.
Okay.
My problem with that report is that I'm trying to stay focused because a lot of this stuff is. I got so many questions in my mind. So I'm gonna just right now. Let me get it together. I'm gonna let y'all take another caller.
Okay. We're down to our last 6 minutes. Now, if the family wants, we can go over just a little bit, maybe 15 minutes, just to tie up all the loose ends, or we can conclude exactly at 9 or 10 o'clock your time. But I don't think we have completely tied everything into a bow if we conclude in the next 5 minutes.
Okay.
It's up to you, Tyler.
You can go whichever way you want to go because I know you have 2 minutes.
Okay. I tell you what we're going to do. If you want to listen to, we're going to go over about 15 minutes because I don't think we've made it all clear and tied it all in a bow, giving them a chance to make their final statements before we close out for tonight. So what happens as a straight-up 9 o'clock Central and 10 o'clock Eastern, is if you're listening via the Internet, you will not be able to listen to the remainder of the conversation. So what you need to do, if you want to listen to the remainder of the show, you will need to get you can still stay on the Internet. You'll be able to chat, but you will not be able to hear the rest of the conversation. So you'll need to get on the phone line, 347-850-8390 is the number to call. As I said, at straight up the hour, you will not be able to hear the rest of the conversation or the rest of the discussion if you're listening via the Internet. You will be able to see the chat, but you will not be able to hear the conversation. So you need to get on the phone line. Dial in at 347-850-8390 if you want to hear the remainder of the conversation. Okay, that said, if not, it should be visible on your screen, the call-in number. Please do so if you want to hear the remainder of the conversation after we go off streaming from the Internet. Now, I know enough about law enforcement to know, and a large part of my family is law enforcement. The first rule of thumb in law enforcement is to cover your behind. But it even seems in this reporting is too inconsistent on too many levels. First of all, a press release should never be more defined than the report itself. And the 911 tape nor the police report ever states where the man said he was in danger. And this isn't something you can go back later and add to a report. You can't come back later and say, oh, and this is what happened, because that is just too crucial to the crime. Well, I don't want to call it crime, but to the incident itself, because I don't want y'all beating up on me and I don't want your emails. So to the incident itself, it's too important to not include that information. I'm just saying. I know that for a fact. And so in that, somebody dropped the ball. Now, I don't know if they didn't feel it was necessary to ask the homeowner what happened, and if that's the case, they didn't feel like that was important to the police report. But I don't know that you can ever close an investigation without saying what happened. And it should be in written form to the incident report. So I'm just saying, for anybody that's law enforcement, if I'm incorrect, please call in and tell me now, but you need to get on the phone lines ASAP to tell me that, because you have like 3 minutes before you will not be able to listen via the Internet. And if you do, somebody law enforcement, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I do know that to be a fact, that that report is not inclusive of information as to what happened. Now, family, do you agree with me? It does not say what happened, why he shot your family member.
Correct. There's just, like I said, just too many inconsistencies as to what happened. And like I said, and it's too many red flags to where, like I said, when you take a young man just turned 21 and he's laying, he's laying there, you know, shot in his head, and then you hear things like, oh, we saw him and we covered the body and then placed handcuffs on him. It seems that nowhere is it where they called an ambulance. So they had to know that it was a fatal blow. If it's a fatal blow, why are you putting handcuffs on them? You know, it just seems inhumane. And even and that is the most consistent thing that I've experienced being down here with the authorities. It's just the treatment is just inhumane. I don't know what that causes. Some may say it's racial. Some may say it's political. Maybe I don't make enough money. Maybe because I'm from New Jersey. I don't know what it is, but I know it's not right.
Okay, you all have 2 minutes to get on the phone lines. You're not going to be able to hear the remainder of the show. All of you all that's in the chat room, you need to move over if you're not listening via phone, because you're not going to be able to hear the remainder of the conversation. And then, I think we're going to stop streaming in about 1 minute. But I agree with you, Mr. Williams. You have every right to know what happened. I so agree with you. And I wasn't sure. I wasn't so sure when I first went into this story that I understood the gray area. I understood that the family was saying it was a gray area, but I don't think I was real clear on where the gray area was. But now, you know, since researching the story and looking at the press release and listening to the 911 tape and looking at the police report, it was not properly done. That I know. And I'm not pointing fingers at who dropped the ball, but somebody definitely dropped the ball. And typically in a situation like, it's going to start at the head. And Police Chief Caldwell, I think is his name, I'm sorry, you need to go in and get some training in your department, because if this is the way that you all handle shootings and Monk's Corner, that is not right. I mean, it's just clearly not right. We're going to go to phone lines, and we're going to pick up area code 405-340. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Yes, I'm Doc Don. I'm in your chat room, and I'm just I take no sides in this. I am former law enforcement. I'm a lawyer, and I'm black.
Okay.
And I am 65 years old, had a lot of experience, okay? I live in Oklahoma.
Okay.
And here, it depends on the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I had my, I have two homes. I got one here in the city, in a suburb, and I have another one in the country where I raised my family for 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
Out in the country, there's no law enforcement. If you call the sheriff, it's going to take 40 minutes for them to get there. Somebody stole my, broke into my well house. First of all, they trashed my home when they found out that I had moved.
Mm-hmm.
Everything out of it. My chest and everything, all of my good papers and everything. Second, they broke into my well house, took all of my wiring, took my well, my pump, my control box, all of my plastic tubing and piping, and my pump. They only left me a hole in the ground. So I am my own law enforcement out here. And we also have the law that you have there.
The
now, it's, if I had caught those individuals, now, I probably wouldn't have shot them, but I would have had my gun on them, and I would have give and I have also a baseball bat and a shotgun. I would have whooped their butts good while I called the law enforcement officers to get there. Now, this individual is in the city. He's 50 years old. He's got three individuals in his house that he did not invite. And it would be reasonable. Now, I don't know what happened, but he's got one that's coming down the stairs with a gun, shotgun in his hand, the victim, and also ammunition. And then there's another one that's gone, that run out the door. Then he hears a third person upstairs. He don't know who that person is, what that person has, and naturally, your adrenaline is going to be high. Believe me, I know. I've been shot. And when you're in a situation like that, your adrenaline is pumping 90,000 miles a minute.
Well, let me ask you something, caller, if I may interrupt you. It never said, unless you heard something I didn't hear, it never said at one time that he saw Bobby Gaston lunge toward him in any type of aggressive manner. So you still would have shot him? I mean,
no, I didn't say that. I didn't say he lunged.
Oh, okay, I'm just saying if he wasn't doing anything in an aggressive manner, I'm trying to understand. Are you saying that he was shot?
Under that law, he doesn't have to be in an aggressive posture to where he's required to fight this guy in some type of a fist fight or self-defense issue. That's not the issue.
Well,
the
if you say he's got, if per one of those reports, and I forget which one it was now, I think it was the press release, says that he's got something in both hands. That means that he can't do too much to you if he's holding something in both hands. And if he's not lunging towards you in an aggressive manner, again, explain to me why he should shoot him.
No, because you have a situation where, first of all, this man is not thinking logically as we are here.
Okay.
He doesn't have but a few moments to think.
Okay,
second,
but you're going
to
shoot him in the head?
Second of all, he's got a guy who's running downstairs with his weapon and his ammunition.
Caller, you heard something I didn't hear because I didn't hear him say he saw the man that was coming downstairs. I think he said he heard somebody and he didn't know if the man was armed or not.
No, he heard somebody upstairs, but the victim came down the stairs, right, and was running out the house with the weapon and ammunition, correct?
But that's not written. Can I interject?
Somebody's trying to help you here. Who is that?
This is Tyler. Tyler. I want to say two things. The caller, you made a few statements. It's not recorded, but you say it was three people in the house. Three or seven out. That's not written anywhere. That's not quoted anywhere. That's not in the 911 tape. You say he heard, he shot one. He said he heard another man, according to the 911 tape. He said, I didn't know if he had a gun or anything. Also, you say he saw him coming down the stairs and running. That's not written anywhere. That's not in the 911 tape. So it seems like you have information, and it don't sound like you're from Monk's Corner, South Carolina.
Okay, hold on then. Hold on. Bobby Gadsden, he was wearing all black clothes and gloves. Is that right?
That's really illegal last time I checked, but okay.
Oh, no, let's answer my question. Is that correct?
I don't know. No. That's the question we have.
I asked if he was wearing all black clothes.
Not according to the police report. Right. I don't know what color cargo pants are because that's in the police report that she just read. I'm not sure if you were on the line.
The report I'm reading here says that he was Bobby Gadsden Jr. was wearing all black clothes, gloves, and had a rag over his face as a man.
We're talking about the official police report. I don't know what you're reading. If you're reading an article from the newspaper.
Listen, he was walking down the stairway carrying his gun. But anyway, all of that is irrelevant. All of that is irrelevant.
No, actually, it is relevant because this is the point.
Now listen to me now. Now I'm the lawyer. Now listen to me. Listen to what I'm going
to
say. The law says that if this man is in his own house, he's not doing anything, okay, not doing anything illegal, nothing. He's just in his house, and that the person is not engaged in any unlawful activity. The use of deadly force is necessary to prevent death, comma, great bodily injury, comma, or the commission of a violent crime.
Right, we agree.
Okay.
No,
you got an undetermined number of people in the house that this guy knows about, and he hears somebody upstairs, and he shoots the guy that has his gun and his ammunition allegedly, right?
That's not consistent with anything that was said or written.
Exactly.
He said that he shot while
they were in the house. For what purpose were they in the house?
That's not the issue. That's all the question.
It is
because
the issue. You cannot say that that's not the issue.
It's not because you got to go by what's the
issue. What were they doing in the house?
The issue at hand is being in the house worth a human life. And you know what?
You're glossing over things and passing over the law. The law, you have to look at what the law says.
The
law says, what was he doing in the house? Was he committing a crime?
The point is
they invited into the house by the person.
The law is very clear about whether the person poses and whether the occupant of the home reasonably assumes that the individual poses an imminent threat to the life and or the general well-being of the person and or his family. I don't know if you're reading South Carolina Code, but that's the code.
I'm reading South Carolina Code.
Right, okay.
I'm reading South Carolina Code.
In Section A, you should see exactly what I'm referring to because that's the way that the code begins. The question here is, everybody acknowledges, sir, that Bobby...
Look at the Protection of Persons and Property Act, which is House Bill number 4301, R412, which was signed by the governor on June 9, 2006. That's the law that gives him the right to shoot this man.
It's been amended since then. And that's the problem. People are looking at old codes. It's been amended since then. So you need to look at the
Let me say this. The law still gives him the opportunity to protect, to use deadly force if he is in fear of his life.
His life, right. His
life
and general well-being.
Right.
Going to get inside this 50-year-old man's head and say that he was not in fear of his life?
Well, we want to look at the evidence of support.
Tyler, can I jump in for a second and speak to Terry for a second? I'm going to speak to this as an activist and also as a scholar. You know, I think a larger part of the issue, and everybody wants to talk about race being a card or what have you. I think a larger part of the issue is the way that we define criminality and the way that society has come to define the value of human life. And it saddens me at this point in the memory of Mr. Gadsden. And I want you to understand it, and I said I wasn't going to speak, but, you know, I'm an objective person. I'm just meeting the family off of this incident, and it really, really saddens me to hear
it
people.
It saddens me, too.
Can you mute him, please?
Were they committing illegal act?
Let her finish.
No,
please.
Let me answer that. Why don't?
Why
are we afraid to say
violence has
won? We're taking this man's house. Why are we glossing over that?
Wait, one at a time.
The point is, and if you can listen, and I don't, you know, I'm not really necessarily trying to reach you. The point is that we have to begin to understand if law enforcement is not able to use deadly force in order to stop someone from stealing a pack of gum or stealing a car or even committing murder for that matter, then what gives citizens the right to decide how they want to take a life if the person is not posing a direct threat to their lives or well-being? Because what happens in the vigilantism and Ms. Bull...
Okay, now may I answer
out,
that question before you go on?
I'm not done. Ms. Bull pointed it out earlier on in the segment when she talked about vigilantism. And I think we got to be really, really, really careful how we assign value to human life and how we allow citizens with no training or citizens to act upon their perceptions of fear without even consideration of human life. A 20-year-old young man has lost his life and the family is grieving over the loss of this young man's life. The question becomes whether it's the law or not. I think the question for the human social conscience has to be, what is the cost or what is the material possession that we place on the value of human life? That's the core. And I think at the end, you know, whether the occupant felt justified or not, I think the fact that he took a life in spite of everything is going to weigh on his conscience. And I'm concerned when we get to a point where people believe that protecting property or materials becomes more important than preserving a human being's right to live. That's the way I'll end my part.
Okay, now you're making a whole lot of assumptions there, assumptions. Number one, in this situation, no, I wouldn't shoot a person for stealing a pack of gum. No, that's ridiculous. But if I'm in my home, just like I told you, and somebody's in my house and I'm armed and I hear one guy's run out or whatever and somebody's coming at me with I don't know what's in his hand. I don't know who's upstairs and what they got. I don't know if they're going to kill me or not. I'm not going to wait around to find out whether this guy is a murderer or not. He's already in my house unlawfully.
So you going to shoot him?
Will I shoot him?
Yes.
If I felt my life was in danger, you better believe it.
We just told you he didn't lunge towards you.
I was in the United States Army. I had to go and fight for folks over there. Now, what about that?
But we just told you that nowhere does it ever say that the Bobby Gaston lunge toward him came at him in any type of aggressive
manner. You don't
have
to lunge. You got a third person upstairs. You don't know what the guy has. You don't know what's happening.
Why don't you shoot the one that you feel threatened by? Why would you shoot the one that you don't feel threatened by?
I don't know. I can't answer that question. He's got a evidently that's for a jury. That's for a jury to decide. Or that's for the guy can if the family can present the evidence before a grand jury. You don't need a DA.
Listen, here's a question for you.
The family can go before the grand jury. And once the investigation is done, they can petition the grand jury to go before it and put their facts out and see if they can get an indictment. I had to do that one time with a sex offender in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where I arrested this guy who had molested my nephew. He was white. I'm black. My nephew, black. And my nephew identified the man's car inside and out. I found the guy's car, and I arrested him, took him to jail. They let him go. I complained. And they said, you can take the case yourself to the grand jury, Officer Frazier.
I
agree. I'm an activist also. I do agree. Yeah, we have serious problems in the area of law enforcement and criminal justice and civil justice in our court system.
Officer, can I just say, Tyler, I have a question for you because you made a statement. You said you fought in a war, but you said Vietnam. Now, my question
No, I was in Korea.
Okay, Korea. Correct. I just said you were. I didn't know if it was Vietnam. So you pulled in Korea. When we ever engage war, especially let's say after September 11th, we had emotions. You know, I know I'm from New Jersey. I had a friend that I lost in the Trade Center. So a lot of people, you know, wanted to get back in business. But however, whenever we engage in war, there are rules of engagement. You can't just go in because you are upset with somebody or, you know, or basically because a fear is an emotion, just like anger is an emotion.
Yeah,
and
just like the EUI incident over in Vietnam.
I'm talking. If we are allowed to allow emotions to justify the use of, you know, the law, high fist of law, then we have a problem because I may not like you and want to slap you in your face, but the law restricts me from doing that because there are going to be consequences. And so all we're saying is, yeah, you were, for example, you said you, when Dr. Zoe was talking, you said she made a lot of assumptions and statements. Well, my question to you is when we asked you what were you reading from, you're reading from a newspaper and we're reading from an official police statement. Which one
I've
do you think
listened
is more
to the whole
the
show, and I've listened to both sides of it. From the police report and from the family and from her and the newspaper. I've listened to your show.
But here's the question for you. Then if you listen to the show, all of your quotes to justify the action basically took.
And I'm not making a decision. I'm not making a decision on it. All I'm saying is that what the law states, and that's for a grand jury to make a decision, and the case is still under investigation, as I understand. And
no,
if it's not, then why don't the family take the case before the grand jury?
We're on the phone right now. We're not before the grand jury, so let's deal with
that's
what
the point,
where we are right now.
Okay, so you're still gathering, trying to gather facts because evidently they won't even let you see any of see his body or anything, as I understand it.
Evidently, we are trying to get answers. And again, you're quoting a lot of statements that are inconsistent with the police statement, which again makes our point that they're questioning.
No, I'm not saying anything inconsistent. I'm saying what the law says here, and I'm listening to what we all have said
you're not listening
tonight. Now, what have I said that was inconsistent, sir?
You're not listening. I said again.
What was that? I was asking you a question. I didn't interrupt you now. So what
you are interrupting me now. You're
you said I was inconsistent.
Now.
Where was I inconsistent, sir?
I said you are quoting. You are making statements or quoting from newspapers that are inconsistent.
Tell me what is inconsistent.
You're cutting me off. Well, I will tell you if you stop cutting me off. And
go
I'm
ahead.
I'm going to ask Carrie Hyde, Ms. Hyde, if he cuts me off one more time, I'm going to ask you to pause his line or mute him out so I can make my statement.
Oh, so now you're threatening me, huh? Now you're threatening me, huh?
And I want to answer your question, and you won't allow me to answer your question.
No, you go ahead and answer
the
question, and I'm going to keep quiet. Answer. Go ahead and answer.
Beautiful. Okay. Now, again, as far as the inconsistencies, the statements that you're making or reading from the newspaper are inconsistent with the 911 call. They're inconsistent with the official police statement. So it's not that you're necessarily making inconsistencies. It's when you put your statement together with the newspaper and when you put the 911 call together, when you put the police report together, it's inconsistent, and that's the problem. If what you're saying is 100% true, then yes, he would be justified if he had a shotgun in his hand, as you said. If there were people upstairs and he did not, of course, you don't know what these people got. That's reasonable. But that's not anything that's reported that, for example, the 911 call doesn't support that. The 911 call said it was one person upstairs, and he shot the other one. So that's two people, not three. Also, it doesn't say in the 911 call order official report that he was holding a shotgun or the one was fired. So again, that's the problem. If we believe everything that's in the newspaper, we would not be on the phone with you. Because the newspaper doesn't say he was shot in the head. So it's not, again, you're going by what you see in the media, and you're taking that as credible. Because if that media report was accurate, it would be completely justified. And that's the problem. When we looked at the official report, we expected it to be what the media report said, because that would make sense. But when we look at it and we hear things, it's not what you're reading. And so, therefore, you're like ignoring the police report. You're ignoring the 911 call and just going by what that report says, because that will make it justified. And the problem with that is it just don't add up, and therefore we have questions as to whether or not which one is accurate. Is it the newspaper? Is it the 911 call? Is it the official statement? And so we should not have those questions on an open and shut case, because Mr. Barwick knows those answers. He has closure. The police were there on the scene. They have closure. We were not there. And so because of that, you're calling one thing and you feel adamant about it and you have a right to. But again, you have to understand that the police force and now I'm going to say it's not consistent with that. So there's no way that you should be as adamant, understanding that those three are not consistent. Being a law enforcement representative, you should understand the importance of those three being consistent. And if it's not, you should support us to understand it. Why are they not consistent? Why were there so many discrepancies? Why were there so many inconsistencies? That's our issue. We're not trying to justify whether Mr. Barker was right or wrong. We don't know, but we should know.
Okay, now, are you finished? Can I talk now?
Sir.
Okay,
call
in
all night long.
Okay, call in. We only got a little bit. Go ahead, tie it in a bow, please.
Okay. I feel for the family. I feel for the young man that lost his life, first of all. Second of all, you don't know what my feelings are on this case because I'm not taking a position on it. And I don't believe reports, especially against us, black people, that's put out by the white press in a situation like this at all. And, yes, all of the inconsistencies should be answered. And that's why I'm saying bottom line is grand jury.
Here's what I say bottom line, too, if I'm going to end with that. I have a question as to whether or not you're really black. You emailed us your picture.
You got a question what?
I have a question as to whether or not you're really black because you don't sound black, and we would like you to email us a picture or post it up on Facebook.
But, brother, I am a black man. I am a genuine black man.
Sir, I have no reason to believe you. I'm just saying.
Why would you even want to question my credibility? That lets me know something about you.
Because anybody that ignores that.
It sounds to me like you may be somewhat biased, and I know you are because you're part of the family.
We only got a little time left on the show, but
why
thank you
should
for
I have
your
to
call.
Email you my picture to prove that I'm a black man? Why should I have to do that?
Okay, we're going to move on and get to the next caller. Thank you so much, caller, for your call. We're going to go to someone who blocked their number. Area code 111-1111. Good evening. You're on center stage. Area code 111. I'm sorry, we're having trouble opening your line. Good evening. You're on center stage. Hello? You're on center stage.
The backup information is going to be in the...
Okay, last time. Hello, you're on center stage.
It's not fixing to let somebody else be controlling or they can't see what's going on.
Okay, we don't know what that's about, so we're going to close the line. Okay, we're going to close out. If no one else has a question or a comment, and if you so, you need to raise your hand now. That means press 1 on your keyboard, or we're going to let the family have final statements, and we're going to close out. Okay, we're going to try to go to 862-220 again. Good afternoon. Good evening. You're on center stage.
Hello. Hi, this is Tina Goldman, a friend of the family.
Yes.
And bottom line, evidence, based on evidence or for what I'm saying or what I'm about to say and what I'm hearing is that Bobby was pursued by the homeowner because he was fleeing out the door and shot in the back of the head. You know, his body was found by the back door. You know, feet in the door, body out, you know, on the porch. So my thing is, once that man chose to pursue Bobby instead of running for his so-called life because he was scared or whatever, I don't think that that's true at all. This man pursued him, shot him down, and then ran to call the police. He was never in fear of his life.
Wow. Okay. Y'all heard the call, or anybody want to make a comment about that?
I'm going to say that's the question, again, we will have, but because they refused to do an autopsy over him because it was an open and shut, whatever, however they want to refer to it, there's no need for investigation. That's another question that right now we don't know, and we should know that because that's a legitimate assumption. And
let me
we
ask
don't
you this. Is there a petition
we should have
in
to
place?
Make assumptions. Excuse me?
Is there a petition in place?
A petition in place for what?
To ask for the investigation to be open. Is there anything in place that people can go and sign to help the family pursue whatever it is they're trying to pursue?
Well, we put on the Justice for Bobby Facebook page. That's what that was about, for people to come on and say, hey, here are unanswered questions. and we get the question answered, and we ask the authorities and different ones to go on to that page and support that. And I think that's the reason why people understand the necessity for that, don't want that to happen, so they go on and post a lot of negative and racist comments. But if we clearly said it wasn't a forum, but again, we ask people, if you believe, that's the petition. The Facebook is a petition. If you agree with us that these are honest questions, that you feel the family have a right to know and you want to stand with us, you know, click the like button and make that known. Hey, we have questions that we need answered. Join us. That's what the petition was about. So, yes, there was a petition, and it's existed for almost a week now.
Okay. Like I said, we're going to close out now. If no one else has a question or a comment, 111, we're going to go back to you again. I don't know if there was problems with your phone, but we're going to try to open you up one more time. Good evening, you're on center stage. Hello. Good evening, you're on center stage. Hello. Hello. Good evening, you're on center stage. Okay, we're done with that. Okay, family, we're going to give you all an opportunity to make a final statement, and then we're going to
close. I don't know how I'm going to get it this time because I don't have.
Okay, family, if you all would like to make a final statement.
We're going to reserve that to Dr. Spencer if she's on the line with us.
Okay, Zoe Spencer, if you'd like to make the final comment. Did we close her line? Let's see, I'm sorry.
I'll say it if she's not on the line.
Are you there?
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay.
I basically said pretty much what I wanted to say. You know, the concern again is that Bobby Gadsden lost his life, and I think that needs to remain at the center. And so, you know, people can argue the doctrine. They can argue the code. They can argue the Castle Doctrine. Or not, and I know that people are going to have their different sides, but the question becomes, what value we place on human life? And for the people in Monk's Corner who have waged death threats against the family, you know, it's very interesting to me, and I'm glad that it didn't manifest in this discussion, but it's very interesting to me that, you know, people will say that it's justified for someone to shoot someone in the back of the head for being in their home, but then they would be willing to invoke death threats on the family for seeking answers about their son and their nephew. And so, again, you know, I would like to end with just challenging people's consciousness and remembering Bobby Gadsden is a human being who lost his life, and the question that the family has is simply why.
Okay. Wow, that's going to be the final comment tonight. We want to say thank you to Tyler Williams, the Gaston and Williams family, and Ms. Zoe Spencer for being with us tonight. We'd also like to remind you that the views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect that of Center Stage or the host. And again, our condolences go out to the family of Bobby Gadsden. We know this is a difficult time for you all, and our prayers are with you. We'd like to say thank you to everyone for tuning in tonight, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dr.